Transmitting from the dimensional nexus at the core of the multiverse, it's the Everworld News, bringing you reports of the latest events from every possible reality.
Greetings, I'm Jim Ryan. Today we'll be taking a look at the simmering conflict between the Stellar Armada and the Kikirian Empire in Universe X-10, we'll discuss the Goblin Miners Union strike going on in the Dragon Dimension, and we'll be doing an investigation into the Clones' Rights situation on Earth Prime. We'll have a financial report from SteamWorld correspondent Colonel George Hibbett, training specialist Tomo Karube will talk about the Triple Dragon Martial Arts Tournament in the Otamu Continuum, and Dina Sirius will give us her take on the Skull Captain's performance on the virtual webnet last night. We'll have all that along with a guest editorial from Jacob Hunter from the Society for the Acceptance of Cult Knowledge, and listener feedback from the future. Back in a bit.
Do you like to write? Or have you always wanted to write, but decided that your job, your house, your family, your pets, your political affiliations, your volunteer work, your hobbies, your church, and that ache in your pinky you get on days ending in Y slow you down? Many professional writers have families. Many professional writers keep their day job. Many professional writers live their lives just like we do. Only, they write, too. Like you should be doing. I Should Be Writing is the award-winning podcast that explores issues wannabe writers come up against every day. Everything from characterization to just the difficulty in getting on a writing schedule. And because I, your host, am a writer who's still learning, we do a rundown of my progress as well. This is not a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do type of show. I'm there in the trenches with you. Visit ishouldbewriting.com to subscribe to this free podcast and download past episodes. Because you should be writing.
Our top story. In Universe X-10, conflict has erupted in the Broken Arrow Galaxy between the Stellar Armada and the Kikirian Empire. The focus of this conflict is Asave, the second moon of Frode in the Matare system. Frode is in neutral space, but at one time the Empire did operate salt mines there up until those mines were shut down for safety reasons. Volleys were exchanged when the Armada responded to a distress call and found Imperial forces there guarding the planet. Since then, a temporary ceasefire has been called. No casualties have been reported as of yet. At present, it appears that the Kikirians are holding citizens of the Stellar Union prisoner, claiming they found them illegally mining on the moon below. The Stellar Armada, however, tells a different story. Commander Ned Steele had this to say.
The insectoids of the Kikirian Empire have gone too far. Our intelligence indicates that none of the prisoners in question were engaged in mining activities. We must be allowed to conduct our own investigation, and the Imperial forces are preventing that. According to all that the prisoners have said, they're just trying to make conditions better for the indigenous life forms.
In this case, the life forms to which the commander was referring are the Asavian salt pigs, which appear on the Stellar Union's Intergalactic Endangered Species list. What further complicates matters is the fact that the pigs are the main source of the success of the Flying Sow restaurant chain, which is Kikiri-owned, and has a franchise operating in virtually every major port in the Broken Arrow Galaxy. The meat of the salt pig, known for its semi-addictive quality and sharp aftertaste, is highly sought by illegal game hunters. They also garnered a somewhat darker reputation from a recent popular Holo film, Revenge of the Killer Salt Hogs.
We've got to get out of here, Nelgar! Quickly! Before those accursed hogs seal off the airlock!
It's too late for me, Ezra. I've been judged by the salt hogs and have been found guilty. They marked me from the moment I first tasted their delicious flesh. No matter how many light years I travel, I will never escape them. But they might yet let you live. Go quickly, while you still have a chance!
Never, my darling! My place is with you!
Can you hear them? The salt hogs are coming! They're coming to devour my very soul!
It seems that this reputation added only to the forbidden allure of the salt pig and made it that much more popular. According to transmissions that they made before their capture, the group that was found on Asave is part of the Friends of Ecology, or FO, a non-profit organization known for their attempts to rescue endangered life forms, their organized protests, and their extreme propaganda. We'll now replay one of their transmissions.
Free the assault pigs! These poor, stupid animals have no idea of the extreme violence and terror that awaits them at the hands of companies like Flying Sow and their silent partner, the Kikirian Empire! Do you know why the mines on this moon are off-limits? I'll tell you why. They're not mines, they're slaughterhouses. They're not mining salt anymore, they're mining pig. Pure, precious salt pig. And if we don't do something now, these hideous, yet noble animals will all be gone. Just because they're not as cute as the Tritanian sea otter is no reason to sentence them to a bloody, searing death at the mandibles of those blasted insects. It's not the fault of the salt pigs that they're so tender and delicious. It's not their fault that their hormones and pheromones hook into your pleasure centers and make you want them more and more and more. I mean, take this little guy. I should be repulsed by him, but I want to get closer and closer.
Dude, you've made your point. You can put the pig down now.
No, man. They need to know what these things can do to people and why they're being exploited.
They get it. Now put the pig down.
No, never. This is my pig. My pig, I tell you.
Just give me the pig.
Get your own pig. You can't have my pig. No one can have it but me.
Hand it over, damn it.
No! The salt pig has long been rumored to have psychotropic effects, but the treaty enforcing the Matari system's neutrality has thus far prevented scientific teams from visiting Asavi for a long enough period of time to establish conclusive results. Kikirian Ambassador Zizek Thrindle denied the prisoners' allegations in a statement made earlier today.
The human terrorists we have captured are clearly insane, as their transmissions demonstrate. The mines on the moon below do not belong to the Empire, and have surely been placed there by these criminals who wish only to disguise their operations with foolish environmentalist dogma. As we were the ones to discover them, they will be tried under Kikirian law. Their slander against the Empire and the good, innocent, hard-working people of the Flying Sow Company will not be tolerated.
Shortly after this statement, Flying Sow Company CEO Bob Spector spoke at an open meeting with the company's shareholders.
We've heard what happened in the Matari system, and we are as surprised as anyone. We hope that no innocents were harmed in the recent raid on Asavi, and that everyone gets back to their families soon. In the meantime, we want to assure our shareholders that Flying Sow will be as productive as ever this year, and we will keep doing what we do to be the best darn restaurant chain in the galaxy. As part of this initiative, I am proud to announce our newest upcoming product, Cow Burgers. We know there are a lot of folks out there who are trying to be more health conscious these days, and we want them to know we've heard their requests for healthier menu items and are glad to oblige. Cow Burgers are made from 100% pure, prairie-fed Ancillian cattle. They taste every bit as good as salt pig, and it has been verified by Ancillian scientists working under a grant from the Kikirian Empire that ingesting their beef causes no harmful side effects whatsoever. So get ready for cow burgers. Even though they're not pork, you can still taste the salty goodness.
At present, the situation in the Matari system is still at a standoff. The president of the Stellar Union has not yet commented officially on the incident, but a source close to his office has quoted him as saying, "Those stupid pigs are going to bring about the downfall of the whole damn galaxy." Ominous words indeed. Only time will tell what's truly in store as this riveting conflict continues to spiral out of control. On the world of Relithor in the Dragon Dimension, a major labor dispute has arisen in the orcish territory of Grak-Thon. It is the third day of a very contentious strike by the Goblin Miners Union. The strike began in reaction to a number of fatalities suffered in the silver mines, allegedly caused by a group of self-styled adventurers who were recently found trespassing.
I were on me lunch break, you see. I were by the mess tent near shaft number 3, and I thought I heard something. So I goes over near the shaft to check it out, and I sees that the new poison arrow trap what we set, you know, with the new Jacqueline spring mechanism, marvellous, that model, marvellous. Well, anyways, I see that the trap's been sprung. So I goes and looks about, and that's when I glances down the shaft, and I sees the bodies of Bickerel Manny and Little Gizmet all piled up one on another. So I cry out, "Yeet!" And then I hear someone sounding the alarm.
That was Zag Glivin, one of the first miners to discover the bodies of his fallen comrades. We spoke to him earlier today. He went on to describe a nightmarish scenario of a party of heavily armed and armored mercenaries viciously attacking him and his co-workers. His story mirrors those of at least a dozen others who survived the massacre. Bazrig Tebs, the head of the Goblin Miners Union, held a press conference yesterday and had this to say about the incident.
"We will not suffer another tragedy like the one what's befallen us now. The strike will continue until Lord Throck gets off his damned posterior and does something to ensure that our workers will have adequate protection from these terrorist incursions fronted by our human and dwarven neighbours to the west. Nilda here lost her husband and two sons in the recent raid, and she had a few words she wanted to say, right, love?
You give us what we want and keep the baddie humanses and the dwarves out, or we do bad things. We do bad, bad things. We make it the mango boom. Boom!
Well said. I trust we've made ourselves clear.
That again was Union Head Basrig Tebs and the recently widowed Nilda Lorik speaking in one of the goblins' local pigeon dialects, I believe. On the other side of this conflict is Throck Kodor, also called Throck the Mighty, overlord of Grakthon. We have Lord Throck on the line with us now. Are you there, Lord Throck?
Yes, human. I'm here.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to speak to us. What is your take on this situation?
We have not yet captured those responsible for this. But it is very likely the greedy humans and dwarves of the West who sent these pitiful excuses for mercenaries to try to steal from me. It will not be tolerated. This is why I say now that once we have finished searching the mines, if we find even a single sign of a human or dwarf, my army will ride west and crush their pathetic lands. We will flay the flesh from their bones and feast upon their entrails.
So I take it you're not considering open negotiations? Lord Throck, as we just heard, the Union has not been saying very nice things about you in this recent crisis. Do you have a response to the statements they made?
Oh, they will get the protection for which they ask, and motivation at the same time.
Motivation?
They will be supervised by orc warriors with whips. Very big whips. This will motivate them.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're going to be very busy. So thank you very much for being with us, Lord Throck.
My pleasure.
As both the Union and Lord Throck himself have confirmed, the primary suspects in this conflict are the people of Green Hollow, a county to the west whose main residents are humans and dwarves. Relithorian correspondent Tobias Martell spoke with Count Maxwell Pierce earlier today.
Count Maxwell, is there any truth to these allegations? They seem quite serious.
I can't possibly comment.
We have it on good authority that a group of mercenary adventurers were hired by someone in your county to raid the mines of Grakthon.
Look, we have had it confirmed by the Church of St. Wilford that the so-called Lord Throck and all of his goblin minions are evil, so any actions taken against him or his miners are completely justified, and as such are not subject to scrutiny by this office. Good day to you.
But if the mines were compromised, would that not be a sufficient foothold to begin a campaign of occupation of Lord Throck's lands?
I said good day, sir. Now get out of my way, you annoying little halfling, or I'll have you thrown out.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it appears that Count Maxwell is decidedly in favor of the mercenary aggressors in this matter. This is Tobias Martell, reporting for the Everyworld News in Green Hollow.
To look further into the reason behind this conflict, we now have on the line dwarven historian Siegfried Hakon. Are you there, Mr. Hakon?
Aye, I can hear you.
What would you say is at the root of these recent attacks on the mines?
Well, Jim, the so-called land of Grakthon used to be called Silver Crest and was inhabited by us dwarves. We lived in those mines that are at the center of the dispute and ruled the land from there. But when the orcs invaded, our heritage was ripped away from us and we were forced to flee. Those mines do not belong to Lord Throck. They rightfully belong to the dwarves.
Interesting. And could you remind us just how long ago the invasion happened?
About 150 years ago.
That's a very long time.
Not to a dwarf, lad. If there's one thing we've got, it's long memories.
True. However, it seems that the other occupied lands nearby have long since given up any attempts at invasion and acknowledge Grakthon as belonging to the orcs.
Ah, but what does it matter what some pansy government type says? Those mines belong to the dwarves, and by thunder, we'll do whatever we must to reclaim them.
Up to and including the hiring of mercenary adventurers to raid the mine and try to clear it out? Something that, if discovered, would be considered a declaration of war?
Well, no, you just heard the Count. He said it didn't even bother him.
So your people did hire them?
No comment.
Ah, well then, thank you for talking to us.
Aye.
So much for peace in that region. Meanwhile, on Earth Prime, legislation is being considered in the U.S. Senate regarding the citizenship status of illegal human clones. Prior to this point, all human clones have been required to use the government's special registration system, but now that law is coming into question. This has been prompted by a recent statement issued by researchers at the Institute for Cryptobiology. Dr. Edward Sandusky of the IFC spoke to the press yesterday.
We have found that the DNA of the group of 1,500 or so illegal clones of the possibly deceased singer, Elvis Presley, is sufficiently different from regular human DNA to be considered a new species.
The new species, which the Institute has named Homo Elvius, shares a higher percentage of similarity to human DNA than that of the chimpanzee or the orangutan, but was different enough to warrant its own classification. Senator King of Tennessee had this to say.
Well, now that we know they're officially a new species, they're gonna have to be protected. Ain't no way we should be treating Elvis as a second-class citizen, you know what I'm saying?
The primary obstacle to this movement is the filibuster being spearheaded by Senator Flash of Nevada. We spoke to him as well. Let's listen.
Dang it, the only way to protect these folks is to keep them registering. I had to do it, and I sure as heck don't think I'm any worse off for it. I think maybe the gentleman from Tennessee has something to hide on this issue.
When the IFC's announcement was made, the National Wildlife Service was quick to put forward a motion to have the Elvis clones placed on the endangered species list. Jack Dante spoke with NWS Representative Gordon Danvers earlier today.
Why this sudden, rapid, some might even say brazen, action on your part?
All this fighting they're doing in the Senate ain't gonna protect all the Elvises, man. Sure, it's a nice effort, but registration ain't the only problem.
Really? Is there something you haven't told us?
Now, just a minute. They're being hunted, man. They've got to register. But they still don't have all of the rights of regular Americans, baby. It's still legal to hunt and kill Elvis in the United States, and that just ain't right. That's why we've got to get all the Elvises onto the endangered species list as fast as possible.
And I assume you're worried for yourself as well.
What do you mean, man?
Forgive me for saying, but aren't you also one of the Elvis clones?
Oh, no. That's awfully flattering. But I'm just an impersonator. Doing the wildlife thing is just my day job, man.
Well, there you have it. A very troubling story from someone who sympathizes with the Elvis clones. Perhaps a little too much. For the Everyworld News, this is Jack Dante reporting.
A very troubling story indeed, with a lot of accusation in the air. To respond to some of that, I have on the line Mr. Aaron Tiger, founder of the Elvis Presley Memorial Fishing Game Club. Are you there, sir?
I'm here, ma'am.
I understand you've been a major advocate for the hunting and killing of the Elvis clones. Is that right?
Absolutely. Ain't nothing wrong with the hunting of these beautiful creatures. Most folks in the Senate don't know what they're playing with.
This despite your club's obvious leanings towards Elvis Presley.
Yeah, man. But that's the real Elvis. There's only one king, know what I mean? These clones look and act human, but deep down, they're animals. And we gotta hunt them like animals. Heck, they shouldn't even be here. We're just doing what's right.
I see. And I understand that you've gone so far as to hold competitions and offer cash prizes for whoever bags the most Elvises.
That's right. With all these copies running around... Let's just say I got it on more than good authority that if the one true Elvis were alive today, he would most definitely not approve. So it is the duty of every red-blooded American hunter out there to do their part and bag as many clones as possible. There can be only one, baby.
Thank you for coming on the program.
My pleasure, man. Thank you. Thank you very much.
International detective dragons from outer space. Things beyond the scope of human understanding and experience. Vast, cosmic, really, really important things to talk about in a podcast that the media won't touch. Naturally, I will go into such earth-shattering subjects as who interrupts my coffee break. I apologize. Have I exhibited hubris? Just a thought. This ain't radio, and I know it. Is it still pretentious? Yeah, I think maybe it is. How does that make you feel? Is this fantasy? Of course it's fantasy. All pretty mundane. www.anim5.com. So as far as this podcast is concerned, International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, nothing but questions. Sometimes the simplest questions are the hardest. Political, social, psychological, metaphysical, and even cosmic. I can only use as a springboard my own ignorance. It's a draw your own conclusions, choose your own adventure universe. The winner of the contest wins. That's about all I can promise. We can't make this stuff up.
And now for financial news, we have explorer, financier, and retired Royal Air Corps officer Colonel George Hibbett with us to talk about some recent developments in SteamWorld. How are things, Colonel?
Ha ha! Excellent, sir! Good to hear from you, old chap!
Yes, I heard that you've recently returned from a trip to the jungles of Venus.
Indeed, sir. I was there with the Royal Explorer Society, and we brought back some most fascinating specimens, I can tell you. Quite a few new cephalopods for the gents in the lodge to look over.
Great. So what's been happening in the world of finance?
Well, as you know, we're still in something of a global depression at the moment, though it does appear that recent innovations in mining and rocketry have begun to help pull us out of it.
So do you think a mining company would be a smart investment right now?
Could be, could be. It depends on where the mining takes place, you see. A chap in Australia has put together a jolly good drill that a number of investors both inside and outside of Her Majesty's Empire are bidding on. So it would be a good idea to wait and see who wins out before making a decision on which mining company to back.
I see.
Aha! But it gets even trickier from there on out. Suppose your mining company takes the drill to Venus. There are precious metals there, but you'll have quite a bit of drainage to do first, which can get quite expensive. Now, Mars, on the other hand, has much easier access to the minerals, but then you have all the bloody Martians to deal with. They've got two species up there locked in a civil war that shows no sign of ending anytime soon. I hear there's a chap in America who's trying to talk Tesla into setting up some kind of electric rail system up there to go between their main city and the face, but as I see it, there'd be far too much overhead involved.
So what if you're just mining on Earth?
Oh, on Earth? Bad idea overall. Hollow, you see. Sure. Africa's got some deucedly rich mineral deposits and precious gems, but if you're pushing forward with the new mining technology, then you don't want to dig too deep or you'll be up to your eyebrows in lizard men and dinosaurs. Not a very pleasant bunch.
All right, so if you're not getting into mining, then what would be the best thing to invest in right now?
Why, airships, of course.
Of course.
Just purchased one myself, in fact. She's been christened the HMS Prometheus, and we'll be flying her to Burma this summer.
Sounds like fun.
One certainly hopes, dear boy. Incidentally, if you're in the market for one, that novelty company in America can do a Campbell model up for you pretty cheaply, but you're better off going with a Daimler or a Dumont model in Britain or France, respectively. Quality is what you want, and you can certainly get it there. That Zeppelin fellow over in Germany seems to be doing rather well, but best wait and see what the market bears on that one.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us.
A pleasure, dear boy!
For our sports segment today, we turn to training specialist Tomo Karube, who's coming to us live from the Triple Dragon Martial Arts Tournament going on in the Otamu Continuum.
Greetings, my friend. And how are you today? Not doing too bad, eh? Eh? You're looking well.
Fine, thanks. So how are things shaping up at the tournament?
Everything is going well. Quite well indeed. Except for one thing. And you do want to know what that one thing is, do you? Surely you're interested. You must want to know.
Okay, what's going on?
I'll tell you what is happening. It's the Lord of Nightingales, that's what. His men have infiltrated the tournament. I know it. Ever since he was a little boy, he wanted to be a part of the tournament. But we would not allow him because he was the son of a spirit creature. But now he has returned and is seeking revenge. I know this because I helped train him when he was young. He had so much potential, but now he's turned bad. And there's nothing we can do. It makes me want to weep just thinking about it. Oh, how can we have been saddled with such a difficult problem? Ah!
So, hang on. Does he have someone in the tournament?
We can't be very sure, but there is one contender that has laid waste to all other contenders so far. People come from all around the continuum to participate in this tournament, and there are many from worlds unknown to Earth with far greater power than anyone could imagine. But this newcomer has beaten them all.
And the newcomer is...
The newcomer is a boy of about 17 who is going around calling himself Black Thrush. He can command the shadows and glides from one end of the ring to the other without touching ground. He bears all the marks of being the Lord of Nightingale's son, but we can't prove it yet. He's beaten every single opponent he's fought so far and has been able to achieve a ridiculously high power level. I watched him fight earlier today, and his energy levels were up to 138,000. Can you believe it? There is no one living who can achieve that degree of power unless they are descended from a spirit of some kind.
So it doesn't look like anyone else has a chance at winning the tournament.
There may be one chance. It's a long shot, but you never know. There is a young priest named Ito who has shown a great deal of promise. He moves very quickly and has been able to avoid blows from his opponent while wearing him down with rapid strikes of his own. It is rumored he has the ability to summon one of the five great elemental spirits, but no one knows which one it is. If it is the right one, then he may just stand a chance to defeat Black Thrush. But we won't know until they fight later today. All I know is that we haven't seen his power levels go very high at all, so whatever he's saving up, it had better be something big if he hopes to emerge victorious.
Well, that sounds very exciting. Not quite certain what it all means, but I'm sure many folks will be watching the end of that tournament with rapt attention.
Are you kidding? This is a secret tournament and has been for thousands of years. It is a very honored and sacred tradition, and only those who are held in the very highest regard may be allowed to record any of it. That said, however, you can probably still find it on ESPN2.
That's what I figured. Tomo Karube, thanks very much for being with us.
The pleasure is all mine, and may we meet again someday.
Knowing this show, that's probably unavoidable. Last night, the Skull Captains performed in a section of the virtual webnet known as Glittertown. Dina Sirius is coming to us live from her loft there to talk about it. Good to have you with us.
Hi.
So tell us about the concert.
It was totally packed, man. I don't think I've ever seen so many twisted tunes in one place, you know?
Ah, a good turnout then.
Huh? You bet. But when the Skull Captains came out, it was just weird.
How so?
They've totally changed their look. They used to have these badass black leather outfits and skulls for faces, but now they just look like Antelopes.
Antelopes?
Yeah, they've totally sold out, man. Everybody keeps changing their avatars into these animals. It's like they've suddenly got a furry fixation or something. It's totally not cool. Plus, they had Mouse Band opening for them.
Mouse Band. I take it they have a mouse motif going.
With a name like Mouse Band? What do you think? They're like 3 inches tall. You can't even see them from the mosh pit. Not that anybody felt like moshing.
Well, enough about the opening act. How did the Skull Captain sound?
Lame. I almost put them on my ignore list. They've gone all pretend emo.
And the difference between emo and pretend emo is...
I will cut you.
Sorry.
They used to be dark and loud, but now it's like they're just phoning it in. Besides, their stream kept breaking up and they kept phasing in and out. It was like watching a corrupted video. Stupid latency. Then about halfway through, their server must have crashed or something, because the whole stage disappeared and it didn't come back. Then those idiots hung there in the air with their stupid antelope faces, staring out into space and going through the same 3 dance steps over and over, till they finally disappeared. Man, I hate it when I'm in the middle of doing something with someone and they just wink out of existence. So annoying.
Well, I'm sorry to hear it didn't go well.
That's okay. A bunch of us flew over to the top of the next building and it turned out they had a swimming pool on the roof. Someone was making a pornographic machinima vid there, so that was fun. Except that somebody must have turned on their age filter or something, because they kept going mosaic on us. Prudes.
Sounds interesting, but it looks like we're running short on time here, so thanks for being with us.
Sure, man. Later.
Our guest editorial today is from Jacob Hunter of the Society for the Acceptance of Cult Knowledge, or SAC.
Hello, friends. I'd like to talk to you about the inevitability of Judgment Day. But not the Judgment Day in the Christian Bible, the Koran, the Talmud, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the writings of Plato, or any of those other modern sources. No, friends, the Judgment Day that I speak of is the day that a rift will open in the space-time continuum and horrible, snarling, betentacle creatures will come streaming forth and slay every living thing on Earth. And you're really lucky, because if you act now, you can be a part of it. Yes, there is no way to avoid the horror that is to come. Sooner or later, all the seals will break, the gates will open, and the minions of Thanalugari Shabagats will come streaming into this reality like Guinness from a beer tap. But when that time comes, would you rather be running for your life, or merrily joining in on the slaughter? If you think about it, I'm sure the answer will be pretty clear. But how can you help the forces of darkness? How will all the hideous beasts from beyond know that you're on their side when they come? Well, more likely than not, they won't. But there is a slim chance that if you join one of our friendly, unspeakable cults and start making those human sacrifices today, you just might be spared. Now, I know you've probably heard all of those nasty rumors about evil cults, and that might have turned you off to them. You might have heard that they're trying to convert all your friends and neighbors. Perhaps someone has told you that they're infiltrating the government and plotting to take over the world. But you know better than that, don't you? After all, what's the point of taking over the world when everyone on it is going to be eaten? No, we're on a mission of peace and understanding, and we want to help people realize that they can only be truly happy when they're serving the Dark Masters. So why not head over to your local SAC office and ask for one of our brochures, or make an appointment with one of our cult counselors and see which kind of cult is the best fit for you and your family. Remember, the Day of Judgment is coming, but there's always a chance, no matter how slim, that you can avoid being ripped limb from limb as unspeakable horrors from beyond carve you into sashimi for their dining pleasure.
Thanks, Jacob. That was enlightening. And now is the time for listener feedback when we read your emails. Unfortunately, as this is our first show, we have yet to receive any. Thankfully, however, our R&D department has already thought of this and devised a method of receiving feedback from the future. That's right, we're going to read some emails we have yet to receive and maybe give a preview of what's in store at the same time. So let's see what we have here. Gandalf writes, Dear Everyworld News, as a longtime listener, I have to say that I expected more from your 1,000th broadcast. Only one interview and all you could get was Ray Bradbury? I know for a fact that Awesome Dude, the first player to reach level 500 in the World of Warcraft, was available. Couldn't you get someone relevant to the podcast? Other than that, after 83 years, I can't believe you're still broadcasting. Cheers, Gandalf. Thanks very much for writing in, Gandalf. I'm guessing that sometime 40 years from now, the podcast will be focusing more on MMORPGs, which may mean that sometime during the next century we'll reach the MMO event horizon, and all media may eventually be in some way about MMOs. I've got to admit that's not too comforting a thought. The inclusion of Ray Bradbury tells me, though, that maybe there's still hope for the future of humanity after all. Either that, or Ray Bradbury is a lich. Darlene writes, "How dare you marginalize the plight of the Mastodon? Your recent exposé on the beast-herding trade between the tribes of Pangaea mentioned nothing about them. The lizardmen of Western Semaphoria force these poor creatures into a marsh environment for which they're totally unprepared, and make them carry their cargo through miles of disease-infested swamp. I, for one, am very upset that you have ignored something that is a major issue for supporters of rights for prehistoric elephantine creatures. I spit on your pitiful news show, and hope that it pod-fades post-haste. With much loathing and hatred, Darlene." Well, Darlene, thanks very much for writing in. Now, we haven't aired that story yet, but in our defense, I should probably just remind you how insanely big Pangaea is. There have got to be hundreds of species that are used as beasts of burden there. I mean, we'll probably be lucky if we can cram in something about the pterodactyl egg smuggling ring, let alone the mastodons. However, that said, now that you've alerted us to it, we'll see if we can head this one off at the pass and try to get a little more of the mastodon perspective in there so that maybe you won't have to write this email in the first place. Lord X writes, "I am heartily enjoying your ongoing coverage of the war in Steamworld. It is most unfortunate that the British Empire's forces are having such a difficult time of things against the German automatons in the African basin. It seems to me that if only they'd known that Friedrich Hammerstein was the spy they'd been looking for, then this whole conflict could have been prevented. Still, no use crying over spilt milk. Keep up the excellent work. Sincerely, Lord X." Thank you very much for your feedback, Lord X. The only problem is that we have listeners in Steamworld, and this war you're talking about hasn't happened yet. So I'm just realizing it's entirely possible that by reading your letter, we may have just destroyed that entire timeline. You know, maybe this whole feedback from the future thing wasn't such a great idea after all. So to fix that, what we could really use is genuine listener feedback from you folks out there. Seriously. We'd love you to write into us so that we can read your feedback at the end of each episode. So feel free to email us at podcast@everyworldnews.com. And incidentally, if there are any other writers and or podcasters out there who'd be interested in putting together a guest editorial like the one you heard in this episode, we'd be game for that as well. Just drop us a line. Until next time, I'm Jim Ryan, and I'll see you all of a sudden.
The Everyworld News Podcast is written and anchored by Jim Ryan. Our script surgeon is Dr. Darren Kennedy. In this episode, Kanji Harrison performed the voices of Tomo Karube, Gordon Danvers, Lord Throck, Commander Steele, and Nelgar. Ben Walker played Jacob Hunter, Count Maxwell, and the Second Protester. Paul Miller was Colonel Hibbett, Aaron Tiger, and the First Protester. Mitchie Howard was Dina Sirius and Isra. David Selby played Bob Spector and Jack Dante. Darren Kennedy was Dr. Sandusky, and Chelsea Love was Nilda Lorick. All other voices were performed by Jim Ryan. The opening and closing music was composed and performed by Kevin McLeod, who you can find on the web at incompetech.com. For more information on the podcast, come and visit our website at www.everyworldnews.com. This has been David W. Brown. Thank you for listening.